Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an exciting story, you know, ahead of us, you know, from a founder that is going to be telling us a thing or two about being a first product culture type of company, how they achieved their product market fit, how they went about it, you know, when it came to COVID, also their thoughts about anything AI. There's a lot going on around AI and also, you know, how they went about raising over 170 million. So again, a really interesting episode. All the good stuff that we like to hear around building, scaling, financing, and everything in between. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Dimitro Voloshin. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here, Alessandro.
So born and raised in Ukraine, give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up, Dimitro?
Oh, yeah. I was born in Ukraine in a small city. It was very interesting journey for me because usually when you are far away from the tech scene, you read about it in the news, in blog posts, on social media, and you try to get there, try to get to the US, to Silicon Valley. And for me, when I was growing up, I got my computer first time in 2000, and then I got an internet, and I tried to basically build products to learn how to become a good developer. I got a computer science education, but my dream was always to build my own products. And I always had that, you know, entrepreneurial mind. Being in Ukraine helped a lot because we have a very strong school of mathematics and computer science in Ukraine. So my education there was like top notch. And though I was kind of a bit disconnected from the all of the tech scene because I was like in the different time zone in the other part of the world, I was always inspired about the US and the culture of technology companies there. We saw a lot of movies about it, like Social Network about Mark Zuckerberg or something like that. And in early 2010, 2012, all of that startup narrative became pretty inspiring in Ukraine. And there were a lot of interesting startups born in Ukraine at that time. And one of them was Grappli.
So then in your case, I mean, what was the whole nature of computer science, PhD? So what got your interest on that?
So we had programming competitions when school kids were writing computer code to compete with each other. And I was quite good at that. I was like in top 10 in all of the country. And that helped me to basically apply to any university in Ukraine without exams, which I did. And I applied to the best university, like on cybernetics department, where we studied mathematics, computer science, algorithms, and so on. And it built a really nice foundation for me because I'm a technical co-founder. So I understand not only how to manage people who write code, but I also understand how to write code myself and what are the good quality code, how technology can transfer to the good business product. So I studied on computer science, and then in 2012, I think, I got an offer to start my PhD career. I started to be in academia for a while, but after a year, I understood like it's not a good journey for me because like I am not really academics. I am more like entrepreneurial kind of person. And I met my co-founders, Kirill and Serge, and we were thinking to start something inspiring. And we started what with the time became Preply in 2012.
And would you say I'm more entrepreneurial? You know, you were talking about all these stories that you were, you know, exposed to, the social network, you know, all of this stuff. What do you think, you know, like really made you, you know, like feel like I want this, you know, this is the path that I want. I want to build my own thing. You know, what do you remember, like at what point that seed was planted?
Yeah, I think when I was super young, so Ukraine was a part of Soviet Union, which was like a big communistic empire. And I remember when Soviet Union collapsed, my father bought me a book called Capitalism for Kids. And I read about the capitalism as basically ideology, that basically there is a value in everything that we do it. We can sell and trade things and we can accumulate capital and so on. And I kind of from the very early ages understood the nature of basically money, capital, and other things. And I always wanted to basically build a company, which would be a business, not like a charity, but a company business generating money, understand all of the cash flows within the company. I was always inspired by that. So I read also a lot of like fictional books, like Theodore Dreiser, Financist, and so on, Ayn Rand, and so on. So like a lot of my cultural background helped me to shape myself as a person who thinks about themselves as an entrepreneur. So that was like a big part of my journey, like reading books and like from the early childhood, understanding how like money market works.
So then tell us about meeting your co-founders. You know, how did the whole idea of Preply, you know, and more importantly, you know, like meeting the people, you know, like getting the band together, how did that look like?
Yeah. So interesting fact about me meeting my co-founders is that I met them through a common friend through university. And I strongly believe that people who study in the university, they don't only get like, you know, technical knowledge and diploma. The most important part about college or university where you study is your network. And I started building my network from the early years in my university. And I had a lot of smart people who I studied with, and they later started working in Facebook, Uber, Google, and so on. So I met my co-founder, Kirill, through a common friend who later started working in Google. We got introduced to each other. So there was some good connection between us. I was more like technical person. My co-founder, Kirill, is more like a hustler, like business person who like do sales, who do operations, and so on. So we met each other and we started thinking, hey, what could be the right business idea to follow? And what we had in common with Kirill is that we were born in Ukraine, so English was not our native language, and we both struggled to improve our language skills. And we started exploring the domain of language learning in group or in English schools or with a tutor. And we found out that there is a pretty good market that is there, which is online language learning. And it was in 2012. So people who wanted to learn languages online did that through Skype, not even Zoom as a major like video conference platform right now, but like through Skype. And there was like a big chunk of keywords in Google of people searching, like, I want to learn English by Skype. And we took that insight, we combined it with our own problem that we wanted to learn English much better. And we started building and shaping a product around that era in 2012.
So then tell us about, you know, like, how did the whole idea of shaping up the product and making sure that you got to product market fit and why, you know, you guys are also a product first type of company. And I think that before you even get there, just so that the people that are listening get it, what is Preply today?
Yeah, so Preply today is the biggest online marketplace for online language learning with a tutor. So if you want to learn English, French, German with a real human online, you go to Preply, and we have more than 40,000 tutors on our platform. We grew from 3 co-founders to more than 600 people in Barcelona, New York, Kyiv. We attracted more than $170 million of US dollars in venture funding. And as I said before, we are the market leader in our area. So like we believe that we provide the most efficient way of learning language online. So that's where we are. And we started from quite a different idea, because now we are super international. Our major markets are the US, Europe. But when we were thinking about how to start, we were located in Kyiv, Ukraine. Kyiv is the capital of Ukraine. And our initial idea was, let's build a basically classified for one city where you could find English teachers in that city. And we started doing that. And we found that the market size is not big enough. Then we tried, okay, can we also try to build some product for schools, offline schools where you can learn English? And we tried to do that, but like the sales cycle wasn't very good. So we were basically iterating all over again with a different kind of product ideas around the same customer persona, a person who wants to learn English, but doesn't have like a good ways to do that in their location. And on the third or even fourth iteration, we found out, oh, okay, but these people can learn English online. And the technology in 2012 finally enabled to do that. So basically in 2012, you could have a pretty good stable video connection by Skype between Ukraine and the US, between Philippines and Norway, between any pair of the countries. And we found out that technology enables it. So like it's a clear new wave of transition between offline language learning to online. We found that there is a pretty sizable market for that. So we explored amount of keyword requests in Google for that and so on. And we had a good team. So it was like combination of everything, like technology, team, the market. And we started basically, okay, that's our market. That's a product we want to build. We want to build a marketplace for online language tutors. And we started building that. And to accelerate that, we even moved to Boston, US, to be closer to basically tech scene and also to the biggest market in the world. And it was quite a journey for us because you move to a different country and you try to launch a product from scratch. Your language skills at that time were not, our language skills were not perfect. So there was a lot of miscommunication and it was quite a stress for us to move to Boston, but it was also an invaluable experience because we were able to go to the universities, campuses to see how people who our tutors themselves basically talk, think about their business and profession and so on. And we were much closer to the fundraising actors in the world. So we moved to the US in 2012, tried to build like probably like an international marketplace being in the US. But to tell you the truth, we failed. We were not able to do that in 2012. Being in the US because our burn was pretty high. We were burning like a few dozens of US dollars per month and we were not able to unlock marketing. So it was like a big pushback for us. We returned back to Kyiv, Ukraine and we radically diminished our burn and we started building it much more gradually. So our first experience on launching Preply, as you see it right now, was very unsuccessful. Our unit economics didn't work. So like we didn't even know the term unit economics, but we understood that if we spend $500 to attract one customer and we earn only $100 from them, something doesn't feel right. So we returned back to Kyiv, Ukraine, and we started rethinking on how we do marketing and how do we do product. And over time, over 1 or 2 years, we were able to push customer acquisition cost like to like 10 times less, perhaps even 100 times less. We were able to become much better in marketing, including organic marketing. And we started basically seeing our CAC, LTV finding themselves in a very good balance between each other. In 2013-14, we were focusing on the markets where our CAC, LTV ratio was pretty good. But then we started expanding and perhaps in 2015, we reconquered, as I would say, the US market and we were able to launch them again, to launch there again with much more success. And now the US is our biggest market. So like in 2012, we failed, but like in 2023, we are the biggest player in the US market. And like, I think we are, the US is the biggest market for us. Yeah, and our thinking about the products that we built was very, you know, like the lean startup methodology on how you think what next feature is requested by your customers that you should build. That's how we started in 2012, 2013. But later, our product culture evolved a lot, and it was because of the fundraising, because we were raising additional funding, and one of the very important milestones for Preply was when we raised our bigger round of $1 million. It was, I think, pre-seed round or some or seed round for us, and that's what I would call smart money because we got investors on board who previously built other marketplaces, and they were able to share with us a lot of wisdom on how you should build a business. And for example, one of the investors in that round was Mariusz Gralewski, and he is a co-founder of Doc Planner. It's the biggest marketplace for doctors. Another angel investor for us was Artur Kostin, and he was CMO at Booking.com. And Booking is the biggest marketplace for hotels in the world. And basically, we got these amazing investors, angel investors on board. And we started asking questions. Hey, how you build the marketplace? How you do liquidity? How you do marketing? How do you expand your marketing channels and so on? And basically, we learned a lot and borrowed a lot of our initial company culture from other companies who were 100 times more successful at that point of time than Preply. For example, from Arthur, we learned a lot how to do A/B testing and scale. So our initial approach was like, hey, there are customers, they want some features, let's build that features for them. But that's not how a bigger companies do product. Bigger companies launch A/B tests, and we became pretty A/B test driven company around 2016-17. We launched like 100 of A/B tests, and it's helped us like to basically to move to the higher leap from like the intuitive type of a company to more like data driven type of a company.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
In total there, I mean, how much capital have you guys raised to date?
$170 million.
So $170 million. Now, you were alluding to it, you know, getting those angels, you know, really big time angels. I mean, you're coming from the Ukraine. So, you know, you land here in the US, you know, you got to figure yourself, you know, and your way there, you know, and network. So what was that journey like of raising that money through the different cycles, and then also from meeting these people, getting them excited and getting them enrolled to jump into?
Yeah, a great question. I would say that initially, in 2012, you could raise money even before you have a product. It was much easier because like the market was like very heated. We were lucky to get great investors on board, but we were also like very hardworking founders to make sure that our product grows. Our growth tempo typically is like 3x revenue growth year over year for the last 10 years, whatever. So basically, we were lucky to have a good network of investors, but we wouldn't be able to raise if we wouldn't be growing that fast. So we always had that, you know, mindset that, hey, we play the venture game. That means that you raise, you grow very fast, and you dominate the market with the money that you raised in the previous round. And then you raise again because you have a track record of that you are able to invest money wisely in your product and marketing growth on the market. So for us, it was combination of us being hustlers, basically approaching a lot of different investors in different geographies, but also showing them what is the potential of Preply, and also proving that potential by our metrics. So we always were very open with sharing our metrics with not only our existing investors, but also with investors who rejected us, and also from investors that we were like talking with. Because some of the investors that are on our cap table, they rejected to invest in Preply, but then changed their mind because they saw how amazing numbers are there in our business. The fact that we were founders from Ukraine and our initial basically location as a co-founders was Ukraine, was challenging in the beginning. But if your business has good numbers, it doesn't matter where you are. So we are not in the era when investors from Silicon Valley just like invest in companies from California, they are much more open to international companies if you have good numbers. And you need to have good numbers to get the best investors. That was our thinking always. Like, we don't want like to we want to stay true to the numbers in our business. If we commit to say that, hey, our business plan is to grow like 2x, 3x in the next year, and we are rising to do that, we would work very hard to deliver it.
Now, when it comes to also investors, it's obviously good metrics, as you say, is key, but then also having a clear vision. Now, when we're thinking about vision, you know, I want to ask you this. If you were to go to sleep tonight, Dimitro, and you wake up in a world where the vision for Preply is fully realized, what does that world look like?
So, first of all, I don't think that we will ever realize our vision in full potential, because vision is something that is always higher than you, where you are. Like, you all, it's more like a dream, and the dreams that you try to achieve, but you don't always really achieve it. So, the closest that it would be to it is that people on this planet have the most efficient way to learn languages, and that's Preply. And they are able to improve their language learning skills that helps them to progress in their career, to get a better relationships, to travel the world, and so on. And people are constantly improving their language skills in Preply, and they are very happy with the products that we have built for them.
So then, as we're talking about the future here, I also want to talk about the way that you guys are thinking about things, because there's a lot going on now with AI. You know, there's a lot of AI-related topics, and I know that you guys are taking it seriously too. So how do you think, how are you guys thinking about AI, and how do you think that's going to also, you know, change things?
Yeah, I think the growth of AI is exciting right now. For us as a co-founders, we think that AI will help people to be much more efficient in what they do right now. We already see that internally. For example, our developers are much more efficient because they have Copilot tools that help them to write a better code faster. We think that the same will happen in all of the professions, and language learning and language teaching would be basically transformed by AI. We, in 2023, already built a few features for our teachers on the platform. And one of the features is Teaching Assistant, where basically teachers who teach language have a copilot on Preply with them that helps them to prepare for the lesson, to generate homework, exercises, quizzes for their students, customized by the student, by their level, and so on. And secondly, we also released a feature which we called Lesson Insights. We released it to the smaller group of beta testers, and they are all super excited. Basically, if student and tutor give us an access to do that, we can record their lesson, which happens online. Then we basically transcribe it and we generate insights from it. For example, you had a lesson learning Spanish, and we generate new Spanish words that you learned on this lesson. We analyze who said what on the lesson, and we suggest to the tutor what should be the topic of the next lesson. We assess the level of the student right after the lesson, and so on. And we basically generate homework based on what you learned on the lesson itself. So it's become a super customized way to have language lessons online. And it's like Lessons Insights features that we launched in 2023. We strongly believe that the future of humanity overall, and also like people who study and teach languages online, is very much connected with AI. But we don't think that AI will replace teachers. We think that AI will give teachers superpowers to become much better in what they do. And AI right now and in the next few decades, we believe, will not unlock empathy, emotional connection, and what is most important, motivation, that other humans bring to the table when it comes to online language learning.
Now, we're talking about the future here, but I want to talk about the past, and doing so with a lens of reflection. You know, you've been doing this now for over 12 years, which is could be a lifetime in the world of startups, right? And I guess the question here is, if I was to bring you back in time to that moment where you guys got started with the company, you know, perhaps back in 2011, even when you were like thinking about a world where you could bring an idea to life and stuff like that. If you had the opportunity of having a chat with that younger self and giving that younger self one piece of advice for launching a business, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
Oh, that's a great question. Higher, faster, and better people, and be much tougher with the people who do not perform. So overall, I think it is very hard to build a product as a basically solo entrepreneur or even few co-founders. So basically your role transfers to being able to manage a great team of star performers or like a star team of performers. And that would be something that I was able to unlock only few years of mistakes and experience, hiring people and being able to nurture the talent within the organization. I think I underestimated the amount of impact that great team has on a great product for some time. And that's basically my job right now. I don't write code myself. I don't build product. I build teams. I build great teams that are able to deliver value. So like advice would be make sure that you work with great people and be very deliberate in building the best team.
So to double click on the team, I mean, you guys have offices in Barcelona, in Kiev, in New York. You have over 600 employees. So I guess when it comes to having a remote teams, like different offices, you know, like that, you obviously have different cultures too. What have you learned too, you know, when it comes to cultures, you know, and having different locations like that?
Yeah. Initially, our initial team was all co-located in Ukraine. And we, as Ukrainians, we found out that we pretty early understood that it is impossible to build international company if you have very homogeneous team in one location. So from the very early years of prep, we started building international teams. So I think when we were like 20 people, perhaps 30, we already had like 5 or 10 people from 5-10 different nationalities, different countries. And that was our playbook. That if you want to become an international champion, our workforce should represent our customers. So we started hiring in different locations, even though we didn't have much money to do that. One of the life hacks that we did to unlock that was that we needed people who are native speakers of English, like from Canada, from the US and so on, but like the salaries there are pretty high. So we unlocked student internship programs. So we basically were hiring students who went on the internship to Ukraine or to other countries to become like an early employees of Preply. And we were able to find the best, like very energetic people. Some of them stayed for Preply for years. Some of them are still working in Preply like for 10 years, perhaps. But they were students. They were not like young professionals who already like have a high paid job. That's what you do if you don't have enough, basically, capital to hire a lot of people. So for us, it was a very deliberate choice that we want to have very international teams. So we started hiring people from the US, Canada, Brazil, Poland, Germany, all of the European countries. Right now, we have more than 60 nationalities working with us, which is amazing. And like, no one even thinks about Preply as something other than international company, but it was not easy to do that. Even for us as a co-founders, like, as I said, like English was not our first language, native language. And we made a very deliberate choice to always speak English in public and private communication in the company. Even like if you are on the kitchen making coffee with you and there are your coworkers and you share the same language with them, you would also like revert to English as a way to speak to them because you build in that, you know, international company. You try to have that gene of people being united, though having different culture or other backgrounds. And we were pretty successful among that, in that. And our biggest push was always like when we were like opening an office in Barcelona, as a co-founders, we moved here. And we started doing like recruiting and hiring ourselves. You basically start from zero if you open an office in different location because you don't have any presence. People don't believe you that it will be big. And you always promise people that Prague will become big. Our Barcelona office will become big. But like people don't believe you. And our first hires, first few engineers that I hired in Barcelona, I met them at meetups in the bars here in Barcelona, but I did it myself. Our recruiting team was not able to sell the company as well as a co-founder can do. So as a entrepreneurs, advice here would be don't be afraid to be hands-on, even in some of the things that are kind of not as inspiring as, for example, building a strategy for the company or going fundraising. Do things that where you have the biggest ROI. And if your biggest ROI is like hiring a few new people in a new location, like do that. We do that.
I love it. So Dimitro, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
I think for people who are entrepreneurs, the best way to do that would be LinkedIn. I think it's like the most professional social network where most of us are like present. And we always have a lot of open positions for smart and ambitious people in Prague. And as an entrepreneur myself, I will always be happy to support and advise other co-founders or founders, entrepreneurs who try to launch their own business.
Amazing. Well, hey, Dimitro, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Alejandro.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.